Hello, I'm Robert Washburn, and welcome to Consider This Northumberland, a current affairs program dedicated to the issues facing our community. We talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life and Northumberland County. So I'm asking you, the listener, to take some time out of your busy day to consider this. The Ontario government announced a major transformation of our healthcare system. A new super agency called Ontario Health is now in place. The local integrated health networks, or LHINs, are now gone. And the Toronto Star published a story earlier this week saying board members of the LHIN have received notices of termination at the same time the super agency held its first board meeting in secret on Monday. The biggest change coming to the front lines is the consolidation of various providers into health teams. This means hospitals, long-term care, nursing homes, community health clinics, and family doctors will come together to create one team. The government says most Ontario health teams will form locally, covering a geographic population of no more than 300,000 people. But some teams will be formed to serve a group of patients with specific care needs, for instance, mental health. I'm so pleased to have with me today in the studio someone who will be one of the critical people navigating this transformation. Linda Davis is the Chief Executive Officer of Northumberland Hills Hospital, and she is here to help us understand how the government's proposals will be impacting us. Welcome, Linda.
Thank you very much, Rob. It's a pleasure for me to be here.
Thanks for being on Consider This. I understand there was a meeting with Health Minister Christine Elliott and a number of healthcare providers from Northumberland, including the hospital, earlier this week. Can you tell us about that meeting and what was said?
Certainly. I think it was a really wonderful opportunity. It was actually our MPP, David Pacini, who I think has certainly been encouraging Minister Elliott to come out to Northumberland County and to hear from us. And so there were about 21 various healthcare providers from across the county, from the Brighton Family Health Team through to the CHC in Port Hope and across. So hospitals, long-term care, family health teams, the CHC, all represented around the table. And it was really an opportunity for us to share with Minister Elliott the things that we are currently doing in Northumberland to support better care for our residents.
And so what were some of the things that came out of that were said? Was there anything that directly addressed some of these proposals that have been put forward by the government?
Not directly, actually. Minister Elliott was interested in hearing more from us, some of the things that we're doing. She did talk about the fact that they are interested in certainly coordinating teams and really looking at how we can facilitate better transitions for individuals through our healthcare system. There are so many silos. We've talked about this before as well, the silos in healthcare. And we need to really try to do a better job of our handoffs as people move through our system. Rather than us thinking about ourselves as an entity, we now need to think of ourselves as a team.
Was there anything that was said at the meeting that you noticed the minister suddenly perk up or seemed very interested in or asked a lot of questions about?
I think she was very interested about all of it. We actually went around the table and every organization represented talked about the various things. I think one of our family physicians who's present talked about a patient story, one of his patients who was being kept at home through the various work of the team and how that coordination was keeping them at home and out of hospital and certainly reducing as much time that the family physician needed to be involved. So I think those kinds of things were very important to the minister and hearing that, as well as I think our community mental health. Obviously, mental health is a very large challenge, mm-hmm. and it is in every community. And the great work that is occurring with partnerships or through partnerships to create walk-in clinics, to create the MHEART program where counselors are riding along with the police officers. So those were all things that were discussed and certainly were of interest to her.
Now, what were the takeaways that you had from the meeting after you left?
I think this government is very interested in trying to ensure that we better coordinate care around the patients or residents who need that care. As well, I think that one of the things that was important to her is to hear the patient voice. And it's something that we want to remind ourselves that we need to have the patient involved in coordinating our care and really being part of building that team. And so that's something that was one of our takeaways.
Now, the proposals that have been put forward are, I mentioned some of them in my introduction. When you listen to those proposals coming forward, what struck you most about this initiative that they're trying to bring about?
I think that what struck me most, I think their intent or their desire to try to better support local needs. And I truly hope that that's where we can go. I think it was the direction of the previous government with the local integrated health networks. And I'm not sure we got there. And so now I think the idea of trying to really coordinate care at a team level, at a local level, I think that's a big opportunity for us and for those of us who receive care. You know, we all at some point in time are going to receive that care, and we want that care to be, we'll use the word seamless, it's overused, but we want that care to be seamless. We want the team members to be talking to each other. And I think another very important point is the use of technology. This government has really stressed the need for digital services, digital tools to help us, whether that is to communicate with others or to communicate the information about care from one provider to the other. And that is something that we really need to look at.
The word local gets used a lot, and I think people use it in different ways. When you're using it, how do you conceptualize? Because I would have never, while it was in their name, the local health integration networks, I never thought of them as being local. So how do you think about being local?
I think of Northumberland County as local.
Oh, okay. So when you say that the government is talking about local health care, so you're saying Northumberland County will actually, as an entity, will be an important part of their policies? Or are we going to go back to, or are we going to continue with this regionalized healthcare where we see people going off to Peterborough, Oshawa, Belleville, Toronto?
I think we will always need to rely on partnerships outside of our local geography. And if I refer to Northumberland County as our local, then we're going to need to rely on Peterborough and Oshawa and Sunnybrook for those specific needs. But I truly believe that the majority of a person's health care occurs and can occur within their local community through your primary care physician. Yes, you might need your local hospital from time to time, but it's very, you know, we hope that it is just those one or two incidences in our lifetime that we need that specialized surgery, that we need that heart surgery, or we need that hip replacement. So those are the things we will always rely on the larger acute care centers for. And through partnerships that our two hospitals have, we will continue to coordinate that kind of care outside of our local geography.
Now, in the announcement, they talked about specifically about serving geographic populations of 300,000. And I look at Northumberland, and I mean, what are we, 75, maybe 80,000 on
about
a good
86
day?
Yeah. Something. Mm-hmm.
So that's not 300,000. So is that something we should be concerned about? I mean, you know, are they envisioning local as, you know, Peterborough, and we're just part of Peterborough or Oshawa, and we become part of their network? I wonder how that plays out. How do you see that?
Oh, that is a really good question. It's a question we actually asked the minister on Wednesday when she was meeting with us, because as partners, we've been coming together and sort of thinking, you know, Northumberland County is a really good, we're a good unit. We know each other. We already work closely together, and feel that that could get, you know, our care could be diluted to some of our rural areas if we were put in with a larger geography. And so Minister Elliott's response was the 300,000 is an upper limit. And she said there is no reason why you can't look at a smaller entity or geography.
Okay. Now, when you've been talking to government officials, and I'm thinking now of any bureaucrats or even our own MPP or the minister, what unanswered questions do you have about what's being proposed?
I think the biggest, I think there's still lots of things to be worked through. And I think that with the various other structures being absorbed into the Ontario Health Board, exactly how our supports will continue to be provided. We do understand that we still report through to the local health integration network staff at this point in time. I've just recently submitted some documents through to the LIN that were required, and then they will send them on to the Ontario Health Board. I think it's really how will we interact with Cancer Care Ontario? How will we interact with Trillium Gift of Life? They were always organizations that you had as a particular entity, you could reach out to directly? Will we be able to do that? How readily will that access be? You know, those are some of the questions that I have.
All right. So just for our listeners who may not know the terminology as well as you do, let's talk about the Ontario Cancer and the Trillium Life Network. Mm-hmm. What services did they provide to us locally and what sort of things do they specialize
Certainly.
In?
Certainly. Trillium Gift of Life is the organization that has worked around organ donation. And although every organization, every hospital has a responsibility to ask individuals when that situation arises, would they be prepared to be an organ donor? Would their family member be an organ donor? We can then rely on the Trillium Gift of Life team to come out and to have that conversation to, in fact, if organ retrieval is occurring, they will come out and actually manage that organ retrieval. So it is a very dynamic group. They have championed organ donation across the province, and certainly advocacy and getting us to be aware of the need for organ donation. So a very big part of healthcare across the province. Cancer Care Ontario, again, a structure that was created to have a focus upon setting standards, setting wait times. You know, what's an appropriate wait time? You know, no wait time should be is good for a cancer surgery, but what, you know, making sure that we're all looking at that, looking at wait times, so really ensuring that the best standard of cancer care can occur throughout the province.
Now, earlier you mentioned that you're still sending reports to the LHIN on a bureaucratic level, and yet we read in the news this week that at least the board members have been notified that their services are no longer needed. There's been at least one meeting now of the Ontario Health Agency. How do you relate to those types of structural shifts? Because obviously from a bureaucratic standpoint of view, those are things that are different. So how do you manage that kind of thing?
Much of it is that you literally have to just understand it and then work to the best ability of what you understand and go forward with. The LHIN has been certainly working with us and continues to support us in submitting our reports. The piece that I don't understand is how that report then travels through to the Ontario Health Board. And that, I think, is very new. It's not even a week old. So it's things that I think we'll learn to understand in the future.
Do you worry at all, though, about things falling through the cracks or misinformation or disinformation coming back and forth? I mean, that, you know, those kinds of transitions, these are the sensitive times when those things can happen. Do you worry about that?
I'm not at this point in time. I think that's things we'll have to wait and see. I think more importantly is the speed, perhaps, with which if things are all going into a centralized situation there, you know, will there be the turnaround time, you know, will that be affected is probably a question I would have. But I think it's early days and we'll need to see how it unfolds.
Just can you give us an example of the type of thing that you might need something quickly decided so that you can react locally so that we enjoy the service or something that's important?
Again, I think certainly just understanding funding levels, understanding the ability to continue a particular program. Those would be things that we would normally go through the local health integration network and have a response from them. So those are kinds of things you would like timely responses to.
Now, on a local level, though, how do you manage this kind of change? Because I'm sure it's not the first time things have changed for you. So can you give us a sense of internally, how do you manage this?
It's interesting, Rob, because I think in many ways healthcare has gone through a number of changes. Mm-hmm. Having gone through that, I think we focus primarily on what is our day-to-day job, which is looking after patients who come to the hospital. And that's the most important thing, and that's what we would focus on. The rest of it becomes secondary, and I certainly will want to spend my time ensuring that the hospital is operating well, and then things will unfold, and they always do, and we'll learn the various processes or methods that we need to follow in time and just go forward with it.
Have you had any reactions from local doctors?
I think it's all very new. And I think at this point in time, you know, I was pleased. I think one of the nice things we are seeing is the physicians are wanting to continue to work and engage in it and a team focus. You know, I think how we build this team across the county even further will be important. But I think there's a willingness and an understanding of this is something that they've always done and will want to continue to do.
What about the nurses?
Again, I had a what we call our CEO forum at the hospital on Wednesday morning, actually, and talked with nurses who were present about the changes. I think it's really, again, people always come back and say, how does this affect me? How does this affect me in caring for my patient? And at this point in time, we can say there shouldn't be any effect on how you care for your patient at this point in time. And that's what we focus on.
Is there been any concerns about layoffs or cutbacks in terms of frontline staff? Now, I know this week the premier himself has said there won't be any cutbacks, but I know that nurses and others that work at the hospital, I mean, this is always front of mind. They always are concerned about this kind of thing. Is that something you're hearing?
I'm not hearing that at all, Rob, right now. I think one of the things we're seeing is that the demand for our service is growing, and we have, I mean, just 2 weeks ago, we hit occupancy of 135%. That's huge. We had, you know, we normally have our funded for 96 patients. We had 128 in the house, and they were throughout. So the need is growing, and I think staff see that. They understand that there's a need for service, and I haven't heard a fear of job loss.
Well, I guess when we were talking before, one of the things that I wanted to hear is how are we going to cope with this? Because you've talked several times, we've talked a number of times, and each time you talk about the growing demand. And every time that we talk, that number gets larger and the demand gets greater. And I know that recently, within the last 6 months or so, you did get some additional funding to open some beds, but yet you're telling me today, again, we're past our capacity, 135%. What are you hearing from the government to address this? Because this is at the heart of this whole transformation.
Yes, I think the largest issue, certainly for Northumberland Hills Hospital, and it's probably true of a number of other hospitals, is the high level of patients who are still in hospital but do not require acute care. So patients who are waiting for placement, particularly in nursing homes. We have at any given day, I think today we had 22 individuals in the hospital, and the majority of them are waiting for long-term care. So they do no longer require hospital care. So I think that's the situation that really needs to be looked at. If we didn't have that high number, we wouldn't have the 135% occupancy. And I think this government, as the previous government, is committed to creating more long-term care beds. We know the Golden Plow is getting redeveloped and there's additional beds coming to the Golden Plow. We know that there is an interest in a second wave of more beds to be announced. So, and I think Minister Elliott did reinforce that is their intent of the government. I think the short-term solution for that is probably the biggest challenge. What do we do in the next 2 or 3 years until those nursing home beds arrive? And that's my biggest concern. And so we have been reaching out, and the government has been supportive of nursing or of working with seniors residents and to support patients waiting for long-term care in a seniors residence environment. And that is a solution that I think we need to try to continue to explore.
What about the affordability, though, of care? Because, you know, it's one thing to say that there are spaces available, but to go out and try and get a space for assisted living even, you're looking at $3,000 to $5,000 a month. And, you know, for some of these people who maybe are living on pension plans that are very old, that could be a financial strain. So are we seeing any indication that there's going to be affordable spaces available, not just simply here are some beds and mm-hmm. it's the left of the private sector to charge what they will.
Yeah, I think certainly the arrangements that we have with the retirement homes is funding through the Ministry of Health mm-hmm. to support the patients while they're waiting there for their long-term care placement. So the patient does not pay anything more than they paid at hospital or they would pay in long-term care. But you're absolutely right. We do have a lack in supportive housing and affordable housing in our community. community. And that is something that our team is talking about, because we recognize that we can focus on the physical needs of you know, health, but there's also those social needs, those social determinants that really make a difference. Do you have housing? Do you have food? Do you have shelter? And so we do need to take that into consideration.
Now, we've talked a bit about the usage of the beds, but one of the things that we hear all the time from politicians is ending hallway medicine. And I think that it refers to, you know, getting people timely help when they need it. But it seems to be this image of, you know, gurneys in hallways and people waiting incredibly long periods of time. And I know that there was a situation recently reported in the local news where a woman complained about spending 2.5 days in the halls waiting to get a bed. How often is this kind of thing taking place at Northumberland Hills?
This winter, it has been more often than I would like to even speak about. And as I said, with an occupancy level of 135%, we know that people are going to be waiting in the corridors of our emergency department. I think we are fortunate that we've been able to open some inpatient beds. Even though they may not be budgeted, we are opening them. We're caring for them in those beds. The hospital was built for 137 beds. We are pushing those limits many a day. I think the challenge, as I said, is that it takes time to get people admitted into the hospital when there's a real push and the tightness of beds internally, and people end up waiting in the emerge for hours and potentially days.
In the article, it talked about there were some stats brought forward that said, you know, wait times 2.5 hours is what the wait time is in. And yet, that doesn't seem to jibe with sometimes what we're just talking about. What is the true picture? Because, you know, it gets confusing, especially when you have these kinds of slogans going out there, and then you see a story like this, and you go, you see, this is why we're so broken. What is the picture, and what can we expect when we go to the hospital in terms of wait times in an emergency room?
And I'd have to say that probably varies, Rob. I think there are days where it can be quite short. There are times where it is longer. And it really depends on the volumes of what's coming in. If we have ambulances coming in, we know that people may have to wait longer sitting in the waiting area, because we do treat those who are of the greatest need first. But we also have the time where all of our spaces in the emergency department are actually filled, and we can't even see patients. Our doctors are going out to the waiting room to see patients. And that often, it correlates with when we have a high number of alternate level of care patients in the inpatient bed. It's not necessarily the intake, it's the outflow that is the challenge. So when we have 30 patients waiting to go elsewhere, then that's when we can't get patients through. We might have 2 or 3 in the emergency department. We have no place to move them until we can discharge someone who might be acute and then through their acute phase and going home.
When we talk about this kind of thing, the descriptions sound a bit like things are teetering, or that we're in crisis, or that there's an emergency, because we talk about things being on the precipice. Is that a fair characterization, or how do you view it so that, you know, how should we be looking at this? Are we in an emergency? Is this a crisis? Should we be, as citizens, be upset or concerned or doing something because it's like this?
I think from in a moment, I don't see it as a crisis. I see it as a crisis because there isn't a short-term solution that's out there. So that's where we need to really put all of our energy into finding it. We will always care for everyone who comes to us. I don't want patients to ever think not to come. We will try to move them through as quickly as possible and have them seen as quickly as possible. And some days that is longer. But I think in my mind, the care will always occur. It's just a matter of, we need to find some solutions and put those in place so that we know how we're going to deal with the situation until those new long-term care beds come on stream.
Well, on that note, we're going to take a break for some commercials. I'm talking to Northumberland Hills CEO Linda Davis. Please stay tuned to Consider This on Northumberland 89.7 FM, your truly local source for news. We'll be right back. Hello and welcome back. This is Consider This Northumberland, and I'm your host, Robert Washburn, and you are listening to Northumberland 89.7 FM. My guest today is Northumberland Hills Hospital CEO Linda Davis, and we're talking about changes to the healthcare system in Ontario. Earlier when we were talking about Ontario Health Teams, we were talking about collaborative efforts. And I'm aware that you already have been announcing partnerships within the community, in particular the Extendicare, Northumberland Counseling Services, and the Youth Walk-In Clinic. Can we talk about each one of those? First of all, sure. What's this partnership with Extendicare?
Oh, it's a fantastic partnership that we've been able to do with Landmark, which is run by Extendicare, to support the patients who are waiting for a nursing home bed. They've been waiting in hospital, but with additional ministry funding, they are now able to wait in the seniors' residence at Landmark. There are four beds that Landmark has been able to dedicate for these patients. They have a higher level of care need than in a regular seniors' residence, and so they're able to, in fact, access that higher level of care while they're there. It has proven to be extremely beneficial, I think, certainly from the hospital, because it's meant we've freed up four acute care beds. And we understand from the patients and their family members that they are very pleased with the ability to wait there. Now, the challenge is that not every one of our patients who are waiting for long-term care are able to be cared for in that environment. So we really have to assess each individual patient to see who is able to be cared for in that environment. And as I said, we've been fortunate to have four of them transferred. We also have gotten funding for an additional four, and we've worked through an agreement with another retirement home. It's just working through the final stages of that, and we hope for that to go forward.
Is this a viable model in terms of releasing those beds that we talked about earlier that were sort of clogging up the system?
I think it is, Rob, because I think it's one of our challenges. Our long-term care homes do not have physical space. And if retirement homes have physical space, then I think we need to try to capture that physical space. The setting is much better than an acute care hospital. Why not be able to fund them? It's cheaper than funding them in a hospital per day to fund for additional care in a retirement center and have the care occur there.
Just to keep those terminologies clear for our audience, nursing homes, extended services, and then acute care.
Sure. So acute care, obviously, you may have had surgery, you've got pneumonia, you're very ill, you're in the hospital, and when that clears and when that settles, you sort of are out of your acute phase. People who are not able to go directly home for a number of different reasons may need to have another setting. So it could be retirement homes, and those are things that the family would do. But if they require a lot of assistance with activities of daily living, with bathing, with dressing, they may have the beginnings of dementia, then most frequently it requires a nursing home level. It's considered a certain level of nursing care that's required, and they would be eligible for a nursing home. Retirement homes are not able to take patients with that high level of care requirement.
Okay, thanks. That really helps a lot. Now, Northumberland Counseling Services, you entered into a partnership with them. Tell us about that partnership.
Oh, it's fabulous. I think, first of all, the Community Mental Health Program has been doing some really good work in terms of outreach. And what they recognized in terms of their clinics is that they had a very long wait list for patients requiring counseling. And so they went to the model after partnering with Northumberland Counseling to have walk-in clinics. So I think it's 2 days a week that they are open, and anyone can walk in. It can be someone that they are already known to the center. It could be someone else. It could be you or I who say, you know what, I really need to talk to someone today. I'm going to go down to the walk-in center. They can walk in. They are able to be seen and to see a counselor. And then if they require ongoing, then they get an appointment right away. And research has shown that if you can address an individual's challenge in that moment, it's more likely to be of greater benefit than having the individual, because sometimes I'm sure there's a feeling, I need to talk to someone now, and you phone up and you get an appointment in 2 weeks. What happens in those 2 weeks? Do you spiral down? Do you, you know, and so I think the walk-in clinic has really addressed that need of seeing individuals in the moment, in the time, and it has certainly shortened their wait lists. There's a huge, I think the people who have been accessing it have been extremely appreciative of being able to access at that time. And I think the new feature is now to be partnering with a social agency that or that also provides counseling for youth. So as of yesterday, we will be able to provide services for individuals under the age of 16. Prior to that, it was 16 and over, sort of adults, and now we are able to provide for youth. Same sort of situation, walk-in clinics for youth.
And are there any charges for these walk-in services?
None, absolutely none.
And where are they located?
Located here at the Community Mental Health Center, which is on Elgin Street. And I've forgotten the address, but sort of across from your office is here.
So it's next to Staples there, in that
yes,
building
exactly,
next to Staples.
Yes, exactly, okay. Yeah, exactly. I think if you go online and just you can Google Community Mental Health and you'll find the information there.
And what is it that the Northumberland Counseling Services, what do they provide to this?
They're counselors there to provide and support counseling. So along with the community mental health workers who also do counseling, together with those forces, they're able to provide at the moment counseling.
Now, does this take any pressure off of the hospital in terms of people coming into emergency looking for these kinds of services?
Absolutely. I think what it has done is, and again, Jennifer Cox, the Integrated Director of Community Mental Health, has some of those statistics. I don't have them at my fingertips, but they've actually been able to demonstrate, A, that it's reduced wait lists. It also has reduced the number of times people have accessed eMERGE. Because again, if you're waiting for 2 weeks and suddenly things get a whole lot worse, you're going to walk into eMERGE.
Okay. Now, I also understand that there are other examples of partnerships, and there's something that you delivered in your most recent board meeting called Social Determinants of Health and Well-Being, a collaboration there. Can you tell us a bit about that, what that's about?
I'm gapping on that one. Social determinants.
So we're talking about, for example, the PACE
Of course, yes. Yeah, okay, so certainly we have access to many individuals who are a wealth of knowledge about health. And was actually started through, I think, Dr. Bargava's discussion with some of his own patients around just learning about how you can take care, better care of yourself. And so through that, it grew out into what we call PACE talks. And these occur monthly. They are free. They occur either at the Port Hope Community Health Center or usually at the hospital in terms of the education center. And we have speakers come and talk about various things. It could be about nutrition and how do you cook for someone who has been ill. It could be about what to prepare. Dr. Barnett, our chief of ER, talked about what to think about when you're needing to come to emergency department, what you need to bring with you. Another one was mindfulness and how do you in fact use those techniques to reduce stress.
I understand even a librarian came and talked about where to find health information online.
That's correct, exactly. Yeah, there's a variety of topics, and as I said, it's open to the public. You do have to register because seating is limited in both of these venues, but it is free.
Now, I also understand that you're partnering with the public health unit as well to undertake a study to look at the community at large and what sort of things determine people's health and how do we decide, you know, well-being and how do we maintain those kinds of things, the preventative side of the equation. Can you tell us a bit about that partnership?
Absolutely. The public health unit has been a fantastic partner on a number of things, whether that's on immunization. We had a partnership this year around our flu vaccine and really working together to communicate out to others the importance of the flu vaccine. I think the other piece is understanding sort of the relevance or the incidence of various diseases within our community. Public health has access to a lot of data that we're able to use and to work together with them around health promotion and disease prevention.
Now, it sounds to me when we talk about these kinds of things that it sounds a lot like what the government's proposing. In other words, we have this integrated system locally where services are being provided in partnership with the hospital and other institutions. Was there any indication that maybe this sort of thing was coming up? Because I know that when you had your annual meeting the last time and you came to speak to us, you were talking partnerships were going to be the big thing about 2018, 2019, and sure enough, you've delivered. So I guess my question then becomes, are you ahead of the curve? Is this something that there were indicators to you before that this was the direction we were going and you just kind of got out in front of it?
I think that Northumberland County has always been good at partnering and working with each other. I don't think it's anything really new, because I think of the partnerships that have been in existence even beforehand, whether it's between the two hospitals, whether it's with the Port Hope Community Health Center. So that it's there's a long history of partnerships. The PATH Project, 11 organizations coming together, partnering together to work through that particular project. I think there's a history of partnerships. I think that what we've recognized, though, just as I think any business recognized, that you cannot be an island unto yourself. One of the things that we've certainly seen at the hospital is the transition from hospital to home is critical. So we have to begin to think about not our care doesn't end as the person leaves the hospital. We have to make sure that's a safe transition, and that the transition occurs, that the home and community worker arrives, that they're there, that they're getting that support. And I think that's pieces that we've recognized probably in the last couple of years how important those transitions are, and so continue to work a bit closer with our partners.
And wasn't that the PATH program, though?
It was.
So is there any chance that that program might get resurrected?
It's interesting you ask, because I think that we've been coming together as a group of healthcare providers now, actually through the local health integration networks. They brought what they called the sub-region planning table together, and that's the majority of us health players in the region. And we, through the summer, interviewed individuals who had been patients and their families. And what we heard, some of the biggest challenges, because we were trying to figure out what are the real gaps. If we want to provide better care in Northumberland County, what do we need to do? And system navigation became one of the biggest points from almost everyone that we interviewed. We did sort of the gap analysis and said, where is it? And it's system navigation. So we think back to the work that was done in PATH around the transition coaches. We had volunteer transition coaches that were volunteers, but trained and worked through with a coordinator and they would be matched with a patient before they left the hospital, and they would help that person to navigate the system as they went home and beyond. And then, of course, in PATH, we use the technology. But I do believe that role of the transition coach is going to come back. I think there's a real need. And if I think about even this government's direction, it's talking about helping caregivers and patients and caregivers to help navigate the public health care system on a 24/7 basis. So right there, it talks to that process as well.
Now, I guess one of the things that comes out of that is how we envision how the system works. And I had an author on last week that I interviewed, and he had a great metaphor. He said, you know, if you have an emergency, you have a heart attack or there's an accident or something really critical, it's like the Indy 500. You know, the pit crew comes out, they fix the car, and bam, you're back on the road. And it's very coordinated and it works very well. But he said, if you've got something else other than what's critical, it's like a snowstorm in a major city. You know, everybody's out and clearing stuff, and it's all over the place, and not doesn't really work in a cohesive way. Does that metaphor for you describe how you see the system, sort of where it needs to be addressed?
Absolutely. I think that's a fantastic metaphor, because it's absolutely right. And even for each of us, because what happens in that crisis, it's usually a team that is already dedicated to that particular thing. We have to become a team now for the overall, so that we can be far more coordinated on the everyday basis versus just when that crisis occurs.
Now, we've heard talk a lot, and again, the author that was in last week talked about a two-tier or a hybrid model of delivery. And we hear this is always the great debate that takes place, and where everybody gets very, very anxious, and that is allowing a parallel private healthcare system. Now, how do you feel about that as a potential solution to the current situation?
I truly believe, and I look at the population that we serve, we need to have and need to conserve our publicly funded healthcare system and publicly supported. There may be times, I mean, we already have some pieces. I think of going to the dentist. We all pay our dental bills. I go and get eyeglasses. You know, all of those things are still, it's not entirely totally funded now. But I think if people need to come to a hospital, if they need to see their physician, those are things that I think we need to very strongly continue to fund.
If I was a genie and I came out of a lamp and I could grant you three wishes, What are the three things you would wish for to improve the healthcare system?
Wow. Okay. Geez, I wish I'd known I was going to ask that you'd be asked this one. I think the opportunity to have the independence as a group of healthcare providers, and I'll use Northumberland County as that group, to be able to organize care as we see fit. To remove the boundaries and of various funding through, because right now we have funding through different ministries. We get funding from health, we get funding from social services, we get funding child and youth. Remove those barriers to be able to say, here's the dollars, go and provide the care and use them as you see fit. I think the other piece is to ensure that it is a program or approach that meets the needs of that particular community. I think it's very difficult. Ontario is very diverse. We have some very large major entities. We have some very rural places. We have northern communities. You cannot apply the same approach or the same solution to every single community. So I guess my third wish would be that there's the opportunity for it to be designed locally and for it to be different.
Now, do you see a role for medium-sized hospitals? I know we talk about the larger centers and then we talk about some of the things that are going on in some of the more rural communities, but we're a medium-sized hospital. Is there a role for us in this new system?
Absolutely, because I believe, and it's interesting that Northumberland County was a good example for Minister Elliott to see how partners from across the county came together. And medium-sized hospitals, small hospitals are an entity where you can get your arms around the community. And a medium-sized hospital has sufficient infrastructure to help support if there is a need. I think of infrastructure, of technology, of information technology that can help support the community. larger organizations it's very difficult to even get your arms around what is your community, and it's a very large community, to know all of your various providers. So I think, pardon me, medium-sized hospitals are well positioned to be able to be a support to a nice-sized geography where people know each other.
What's the things that keep you awake at night?
Well, I think part of it is that we really need to fix a couple pieces of the system before I foretell too much longer, because I know I'm going to need it. And that is the long-term care. That is one of the things that I think I feel it's very difficult to have people in a setting, the hospital, for example, when you know that's not the right place for them. They belong in a different place, in a more home-like environment. Those are the things that keep me up at night. I think the other piece is the understanding of our entire population about their responsibility for their own health. I think it's one that I know you and I have talked about before. We need to recognize that we have to be part of the solution. We have to make sure that we're using our health services wisely. We need to keep ourselves as healthy as we can. We need to walk and we need to have exercise. We need to eat properly. So I think that I look at the younger population and I'm not sure they understand what they're going to need to do to inherit a really strong healthcare system, because they need to be taking a part of it. And so that is something that I do worry about.
The long-term care piece, is that a bricks and mortar kind of thing? Is it that kind of thing that we need, or are there interim steps somewhere in there that you see can be done?
Well, I think there are several. I think that and one of the pieces is, and I certainly believe in the philosophy, is you want to keep people at home as long as possible. We've not been able to get there yet where we've had a strong home and community program that actually keeps people in their home. Plus, our population is aging, and really aging quickly, to the point where we won't be able to keep everyone at home for their whole life, because people are living longer too. So I think it is one that is we need to address, because our population is going to continue to age and to grow.
Is there any way of getting the ideological politics out of the debate over healthcare?
Tell me a bit more about what that means.
Well, you have one government comes in and they support a publicly funded, very strong, publicly funded system. Then there's others that come in and say it's a two-tier system. We need privatization. The private sector will look after this. I mean, those are ideological things. That's not necessarily saying what's best for the patient. It's more what's best for the political party, for what they believe in. So what I'm saying to you is there any way that we can back off of those ideologically opposed points of view so that we can focus in on patient care and delivering a quality system?
I think the more that any government listens to the people, they'll understand what's needed and how to deal with it. I think it's difficult to have and to be able to allow the healthcare providers to organize care versus being instructed on how to organize care. I think that's very important as well.
Linda Davis, I want to thank you so much for coming in today. It's the fastest hour on radio, I swear. I really appreciate your candor and your frankness in discussing this, because I think we all need to understand this and so we can act in our best interest as a community. This was the third in a series of interviews I will be doing over the next few weeks looking at healthcare services in Northumberland. I have guests coming in from various services who will help us parse out what will all this change mean to us here in the county. And next week, my guest will be Duff Sprague, the Executive Director of Community Health Centers of Northumberland. And by the end, I'm hoping to get our MPP, David Pacini, to come in and help shed some light on what the government is doing. So I hope you'll continue to join me each week as we work our way through these complex issues. If you have any comments, questions, rants, or raves, please email me at considerthisnorthumberland@gmail.com. Or you can go to my Facebook page, Consider This, or if you're on Twitter, you can message me at rwash. I will read out a selection of comments on next week's show. If you would like to listen to this or share it or any podcast that I do, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. There you will find past podcasts, news, and other information about life and politics in Northumberland County. Or you can go to the radio station's website at northumberland897.ca. I'm Robert Washburn. Thanks for taking the time out of your busy day to listen in, and I hope over the week you will continue to consider this, Northumberland.